What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, proposing no parking minimums to council. As community builder at Strongtowns, I have the pleasure of conversing every day with readers and members interested in learning more about how Strongtown's concepts apply to where they live. The question I'm asked most frequently, why and how should my city or town remove parking minimums? And understandably so. In the pursuit of becoming a strong town, removing parking minimums is one of the most effective policies city leaders can pursue because, as you'll learn in this episode, it encourages development, makes housing more affordable, and of course, doesn't create so much wasted space. Pitching the idea to council, however, whether you're a councilperson yourself or a concerned citizen, can be challenging. That's why in this episode, we have John Reuter on the podcast. Board member at Strongtowns and former councilperson at the city of Sandpoint, Idaho, where he successfully removed parking minimums in his downtown. In this episode, John shares how you can propose no parking minimums to your own council, including how to tell a compelling story, how to find data that enhances your story, and how to build support throughout the community to end parking minimums. Enjoy.
Hey there, John. How are you today?
Hello. It's great to be here.
So happy to have you on the podcast. How's life in Seattle?
It is, rainy, which, is exactly as it should be.
Good. I'm happy to hear it, John. Well, John, man, so happy to have you on the podcast today. We have a great action to cover together and one that you've taken action on going back to your councilman days, which we'll hit on here in a little bit. And that is proposing no parking minimums to council. And John, I love this action for a few reasons. First, as community builder, I get the pleasure of talking to a lot of members and readers. And this is a question I get a lot. We have a lot of tremendous followers that want to learn how to bring up this conversation locally. And then second, I think about all the people that reach out to Chuck and say, how do we become a strong town? What is the silver bullet? And I know Chuck often says, hey, the first thing you can do to take that step towards becoming more financially resilient is ending parking minimums. So we got some great stuff to cover together, John. I'm looking forward to it.
I am always excited to talk about parking minimums, which I think is unusual outside of this miniature world of strong towns that you and I both live in. Right. But you start to realize as you look at a city and you look at the built environment, as you walk along at just how much space we take up, right, with parking. And how much as you go around your city, whether it's a small town or a big city or a suburb, just how much of the built environment has gone into parking. And so the decisions we make around parking, I think, are so much bigger than it might immediately appear to those of us because we've almost taken it completely for granted, right, in so many places. So it's exciting to talk about someone else who's actually excited about parking requirements. I was talking to my wife just before I got on here, and she said, oh, what are you going to talk about? And I'm like, parking minimums. And she goes, ugh. But I'm like, no, it's really important and exciting.
And John, you've been in the parking minimums game for a bit. I know you're on the board now at Strongtowns, doing a great job of helping us craft our vision as an organization. But man, flashback, what is it? Almost 12 years now? Back when you were on the council in Sandpoint, Idaho? Is that correct?
Over a decade now before appointed to the city council. And literally the first issue that I ever took a vote on was about parking minimums.
And you have a great post on this on Strongtowns that listeners will include in the link. And John does a great job of describing how parking minimums almost destroyed his downtown. And John, 2007. Was parking minimums even in your vernacular then? Because I know Chuck was even blogging yet at that point. Or were you just concerned about, hey, I might lose this favorite pizza spot of mine? What was the conversation like in your head?
So it was the summer of 2008. What was I thinking at this point in time? I was aware of parking minimums because I had actually, because they were actually like a hot topic in terms of the downtown business community. And I was actually on the board of our downtown business association at the time. So that was sort of my entry into parts of the local politics there. So I was aware of the impact it was having on businesses in terms of being able to expand or in terms of like, you know, like parking is always the hot topic, right? And so, yeah. You know, the only topic that was more controversial when I was on city council than parking was dog parks, which is a whole nother story, which is what really that really riled people up on both sides. So definitely was there on, it was definitely something that people thought about, something people were talking about, and something that was rising in the public consciousness, at least of people in that downtown community. But what specifically brought it up at the very beginning, and I think this actually goes beyond the article that I wrote, was there was an old middle school in town that was going to come down and it was falling apart. And there was an investor, a developer, who wanted to save it and rebuild it and reconstruct it. But the parking requirements to redevelop it into office space were much, much higher than the parking requirements to have it as a as an elementary or a middle school. Which doesn't necessarily on the surface even make a lot of sense, because the intensity of use in terms of number of people and amount of traffic was probably higher under that old educational use. So he came to the council and said, and this is literally the first thing I get sworn in, and then immediately this is the first question on the agenda was, will you give us a break on our parking requirements? And these, what we had were really significant in lieu of parking fees that were $10,000 per parking spot that you had to pay. And he's like, this makes it impossible for us to actually proceed with our renovation.
Uh-huh.
And to actually, you know, we can't actually get this building open. Like we've done most of the work, but like we can't afford the fees to get our occupancy permit is what I recall it going, happening. The first vote I believe I ever cast on that council, I might have even made the motion because I was that kind of young, obnoxious upstart at the time. Some of that stayed, but was to say we're going to eliminate at least in part those parking minimums, and that's what first got me thinking. And then I made a motion shortly after that, I think, or possibly one of my colleagues did, to actually do a study of trying to remove parking minimums throughout the downtown. Particularly looking at historic buildings like that one.
Yes, and this translates well to your Strong Towns posts. And I want to have you elaborate on that for a little bit for us, because it's a very compelling story. If I understand correctly, there was a bank that was wanting to create another location in downtown Sandpoint. The current parking minimum requirements called for 200 new spots, and would have taken your favorite pizza spot, your favorite coffee spot, some housing. What was that like as a brand new council person?
I mean, it was crazy, right? Because it was a whole deal that had been negotiated beforehand, or really failed to be negotiated. And so this bank had come in and they said, look, there's no way we're going to pay this really high fee that you've set up for us, because we can actually just buy the land around us for less than what the cost is. And we'll turn it into parking and we'll sit on it, and at least we have an asset. Right. And so they were going to have to knock down all these buildings around them, just like you named, including this really, really good pizza place, which is not, you know, I'm not going to say that was my primary motivation, but it was a factor. You know, you don't want to. I liked Babs Pizzeria that was on that corner there. And then the housing across the street and this Monarch Mountain Coffee, which is this place, which was the place in town where people got together to talk about things and gossip and share stories and talk about their lives. Yeah. And, you know, sort of, it was this key hangout place. And all these things were like to get bought up and knocked down by this bank for parking. And so my thought was, there has to be a win-win here where we can relieve them of these parking requirements and come up with a better deal. And so during the same time that we're moving this trying to start figuring out how to get to a change in the code to remove city parking requirements, I and a couple other city council members sit down with the bank to make a deal to say, like, okay, what can we do? And what we agreed was to dramatically reduce and basically remove all the parking requirements that were going to actually require them to knock down these buildings, and just require the existing parking they were able to supply and that the market demanded, rather than that we were just requiring through regulation, whether or not they were needed. And what we got in exchange was actually a small business incubator with free office space for the city to rent out to small businesses to help them, sort of like maybe an early version of WeWork, right? With these little office cubicles that people could expand outward. Right. Which Sandpoint, we should note, is a small, small town in North Idaho of about somewhere between 6,000 to 8,000 people live in Sandpoint. And it's a small town with roots in logging that, due to its beautiful location on a Lake Ponderay, has increasingly become a place that people like to come and visit and recreate and enjoy the ski hill there called Schweitzer up in North Idaho. So, but it still has this combination of those rugged roots along with this new tourism and recreation economy, and really a vibrant music scene that's grown over time, and arts, all sorts of things there.
Yeah. So
it's this fun community that has people from all across the political spectrum. I think the one thing that ties people together in Sandpoint is no matter what their politics, they're all pretty radical. and they're all kind of eccentric and fun characters.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the lay of the land of the terms of environment in a pretty rowdy political environment. What we used to say in Sandpoint, Helen Newton, who was the longest, was one of the longest serving city employees and then was on the council with me. She told me once, in Sandpoint, we're a city where we circle the wagons and then we shoot inward. It was a little rough and tumble. We make this deal with the bank, and then it's onward to figure out, okay, what do we do with the rest of the city?
I love that, John. And I want to flash back to that one of those first conversations you had with council. It sounds like you had the luxury of having some like-minded peers on council who understood, hey, we don't want to make these guys create 200 spots. We don't want to have to lose all these local small businesses. Let's think about a listener who has this idea, wants to have a similar approach that you had, John, but doesn't have some of those like-minded colleagues on council. What's the best way to even introduce this idea? Especially if, in this example, we could point at the bank. We have a concrete example to say, hey, if we stick with the existing parking minimum requirements, we'll either A, maybe not even get this development, B, if we do, we might be losing some wonderful small businesses. John, how can someone even begin to bring up this conversation, especially if they don't have a project to point to?
Well, I want to just be really clear.
Please.
The political support was there for this one old historic building, right, that tugged at people's heartstrings. The bank was much more controversial because there was an argument that we were letting the bank off the hook, right, for all these fees, right, that they would owe. And it was like, no. We don't. What we're letting the bank off of is doing something we don't want them to do anyway, right?
That's right.
But that was a process to get people there because, people thought, oh, you're just selling out to this big bank. And it's like, no, I'm saving the local coffee spot. And that's why it was so important that we got something in return and didn't just eliminate the parking requirements. The second thing I would say is it's really important that policy, I think this is just quintessentially important to the strong towns approach, that policy not just be ideological or intellectual, but be rooted in your place and in your community.
Yes.
Right. And so when you say, well, if there is no example, how do you do it? I would say, well, maybe this isn't the right priority for you. However, I have yet to go to a community where development is taking place, and that's a really key part of it here, right? Where development is taking place, where people are investing to some degree, it may not be the boom times, it may be some gentle redevelopment here or there, or some remodeling, or some slight changes, where if parking minimums are in place according to the old handbook and the standards that have been perpetuated across the nation, that parking actually isn't harming the ability for that investment to take place. Mm. So if you have people who are interested in investing to any degree, and when I say people interested in investing, it could be, you know, I'm talking about small mom and pop businesses, not about necessarily like some big, you know, community bank. For example, the one that really helped us get this across the line, or one, there's like about two or three that really helped us get across the line, but my favorite is this Mexican restaurant called Joel's. And Joel's is the quintessential strong towns business. It had started as just a taco truck, right? Driving around town and opening up where people were and selling tacos from a truck. And then it had turned into a little stand, right? Without a stable location. And then over time, they built up an actual like stable place that that was going to stick around and was there. And they were ready to expand this thing. And they happened to be located right across from the publicly owned city parking lot that had, you know, 300 parking spots. Yes. And we were telling them, if you want to expand your place, you have to either provide parking to add more seating, right? You have to add parking, or you have to pay us $10,000 a spot. And they said the cost of the parking fees were more than the cost of the expansion they wanted to add to their business.
Wow.
Right? So this is where parking is actually, and parking minimums are really like playing out in our small towns and in our communities everywhere, is really for the small business owner who goes, I just want to add some more seating so that I can have some more customers and I can like incrementally grow my business. And parking says no. These parking minimums say no, we're not going to let you do that. We're going to charge you an arm and a leg and more than it even costs for the renovations, even though we have a city parking lot right across the street. Oh. And so the first step I would say is to this process is find actually those solid examples. Figure out where parking minimums are actually making it so that investment, they're either blocking investment, they're delaying investment, or they're causing investment to go into building parking spots instead of actually growing economic activity, right? And creating jobs and creating fun and lively places to be. That's the first thing I would do, is actually figure out where those places are going. And then there's two more things that I would do. One, I think there's lots of stuff out there now to show how parking minimums actually harm towns, right? You can point to this article mm-hmm. about Sandpoint. You can look at, if you're in a bigger city, you can point to the literature on big cities, the people like Donald Shoup have helped written, like the high cost of free parking, right? But you can point out the actual research there, which there's a whole audience, elected officials, who just need to know an expert tells them and experience tells them, you know, of a similar size city that like, oh, this isn't going to be a disaster and it's actually important to do. You have a solid yes. example. You've got other experiences and places and research to say, look, this is absolutely true. This is going to be a good thing for us. And then the third thing, I think the most obvious and easy argument against parking minimums is that they essentially ban the building of downtowns the way we used to build them.
Yes.
Right? And so you've basically outlawed downtown. And I think that's one of the most emotional and clear and obvious examples to bring to people is just that, you know, that's just obvious, right? We've made it so now you can't build what we used to build here. And these are our favorite parts of our cities. Why are we banning people from building the thing that we like best?
That's right, John. And listeners, if you want to dive into a strong town story that goes deeper into what John's referencing, there's a great post on the site that I'll link to in the show notes by Mr. Benjamin Ledford. It's titled, "We Forbid What We Value Most." And that's exactly what John's talking about. You walk around your historic downtown and you love your little indie theater, you love your dive bars, you love your music venues. Hey, if these were built today, we couldn't happen. It'd be totally illegal. That's a compelling story, John.
Thank you. I think that's, to me, you know, the case that we have to make there. I also think it's really important. It's not just what you have to say, but it's about building a coalition of people too. Right, of pulling people together and actually going and talking to local business owners and getting them to show up and trying to build stuff. But all of this gets at, like, beyond parking requirements. The other thing I just want to mention here about this approach of, like, having things grounded in communities is I think it really calls it out for the type of elected officials that we need now. And we really need elected officials. And a strong towns elected official, in my opinion, is someone who doesn't just go sit up at a dais, right, at a council meeting, and doesn't just sit and like quiz engineers, but is actually going out, walking neighborhoods, knocking on doors, talking to people, and seeing the community and seeing what's happening through the people who live and work there and are raising families in that community and understanding it really at that local scale, right? You can't do the work of an elected official just from City Hall. You have to actually go out into the community. And I think increasingly we need elected officials that are, you know, half community organizer, right? And half doing that work of actually also, you know, playing that leadership role in City Hall. It has to be both. And you have to have a blended model there.
Yes, I love that, John. And that's the great thing about this particular action, proposing no park minimums to council. Because really, whether you are an elected official, whether you're a small business owner, or you're just a concerned citizen, with this particular action, it's so easy to go out and just simply observe. Get that data, you know, if you want to just map the existing parking supply, go out on a Tuesday, Wednesday night, see how most of it's unused. Really, anyone can go out and make these observations. You don't need some crazy GIS platform or software. It's like you said before, John, it's just going out, being a part of the community, being on the ground, and observing what you likely feel within you is that we have too much parking. And 99% of the time, John, it sounds like our observations are going to back up what our gut's telling us.
Yeah, and the other thing is, right, I just want to say to everyone who's not an elected official, right, which is most of us, including me now, is that if your elected officials aren't coming out of City Hall, if they're not showing up, if they're not looking at these things, right, what can we, you know, obviously we have elections, which are a useful accountability tool, but the other thing is bring the information to them. Take pictures and bring them in and go and show them to them. Go and take maps out and show, look at where it's happening here and the kind of exercises that Jacob was talking about there. Actually, bring concrete examples, and the more visible, the better. Show them the buildings that everybody loves in their community, like, right? Not just in words, but also like actually bring it in and be like, this would be banned now. You can't build this building anymore in our town. Why? And why, you know, why would we possibly ban this building? And make it real. And that's, I think, the key thing to advocacy around these issues is have it be grounded in the actual, you know, the actual real experience of being somewhere, rather than have it be about an academic argument. Because when we exist in that academic argument space, right, and not that you can't make the academic argument, absolutely follow up with it, follow up with Donald Shroop, follow up with those books, follow up with that information. The data is on our side, and absolutely provide that data as a secondary point. But when we lead with that data, before getting people just to apply their own common sense and look at what's actually happening in our communities, we're playing on the turf, right, of the engineers and the planners. And too many of them still haven't figured this out yet. And in a town where you still have your parking minimums in place and are seeing a lot of resistance, including from city staff, it's really important that you change where that conversation is taking place to actually make it a broader community conversation about values and not have it just exist in that realm of expertise.
I love that.
You know?
Yes. And I imagine this is encouraging for a lot of listeners who aren't elected officials, because I think for all of us who, you know, are kind of self-proclaimed urbanists, whatever term you want to use, we're excellent storytellers. You know, we're so used to snapping a photo with our iPhone and tweeting something out, to post something on Facebook or Instagram. We're naturally driven by imagery and the story behind it. And it sounds like this is a great opportunity to pair the stories that we get with some academic literature, whether it's Strong Towns, Donald Shroop, the few of the other folk you mentioned, John. That's wonderful.
Do a Black Friday parking, right? Every year, on the day after Thanksgiving, one of our first ever big, like, Strong Towns campaign was having people around the country, and now I think it's even bigger than Strong Towns, take pictures of how much people were parking on the biggest shopping day of the year, and seeing all of these half-filled or empty lots or available parking spaces still. Well, you can do that at a micro level in your own city, and you can know what the big days are. Right. In Sandpoint, it was the 4th of July was the big day. And so it was like going out and figuring out, well, how many spaces do we still have here on the 4th of July? And if you go just a couple blocks over where people, there's no parking anywhere, you find out, oh, we actually have plenty of spaces left.
That's right.
So that people say every spot's filled, and you go, well, it's more filled than usual. But even on the busiest day of the year, you're talking about walking a couple extra blocks.
That's right. And we have a lot of great articles on that topic, listeners. One that comes to mind, we got one from Nate Hood, where he shares some four easy steps to squash the there's no parking arguments, which I'll share in the show notes as well. John, I want to go back to timing real quick and make sure I get this right as well. So in Sandpoints, you know, this conversation arose because of renovating the middle school, and then afterwards with the bank wanting to create a new development downtown. How easy is it for elected officials to make modifications to the code? You know, again, there's a great opportunity for Sandpoint to do it, make this brief tweak with downtown. If someone just brings up out of the blue, how effective is it right away? Or should we be embracing, like what y'all did in Sandpoint, some of our smaller victories? You know, maybe the goal isn't to abolish, or the goal is, of course, to abolish all parking minimums. But if we don't get that far, it's all good.
I think, right. And what we've seen actually is Sandpoint just earlier this year or late last year, I think it was earlier this year, and Aaron Quayles, the current city planner there, actually wrote an article about what's happening there now and actually showed the impacts of what's happened with parking minimums since they were removed, right? And all the growth that's happened. So great article. I'm sure we can link to it in the show note. Take what you can get as you can get it, because the results are going to prove themselves and it's going to keep expanding. And that's what I was trying to get at, right? Is that Sandpoint has continued to build on these and continued to relax parking requirements, building off of that initial success, right? That we keep actually getting, they got looser and looser as time goes on. And I think we'll have, and you know, and the ones that were most problematic were the ones downtown that were most holding back people from being able to do things that were most out of whack with what was actually demanded by people and what they actually needed for their use of downtown. Now that said, I think people should still aim bold and you should still ask for what you want and negotiate from there, right? People who ask for more in negotiations tend to end up with more, is like an age old advice of negotiation. So I don't want to like ignore that reality. The other thing I would say, when I was on the city council, I had one of those, like, I had a bunch of index cards. I had one of those old like index card filing cabinets. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but it's like a little, just a little thing with index cards in it. And what I did is every time there was something that I said, boy, this is a policy that we ought to pursue, or here's a problem and here's something we ought to do, I would write it down on one of those index cards and put it in there, right? And every few months before a council meeting, and always before I reviewed the city's budget for the next year, I would go through and read all of those index cards. And so when it came to the city's budget time, or as we were discussing policy, I had these things and I'd like reorganize them or change them around or edit them a little bit. I knew here are things that I want to do, and looked for the opportunities to make them happen, right? And so I think, look, the politics of what's happening and what issues are coming to the front and when a code change is going to be easiest to happen, right, varies from time to time. It can be hard to start a code change, but sometimes you're in the middle of a piece of code and then you can just plug this in as an amendment at that point in time, or the conversation will come up because you have this old historic building that was coming up. I mean, I did not understand that parking requirements were and eliminating parking minimums was as important as I do now. When I first started, it was just the first thing that showed up in front of me, right? And that was on one of those cards that I'd been, when I first got on the council, I'd been thinking about. And I said, oh, well, this is one of them. Let's go do it. This is the one that's right here. And that's what I would say is, like, know what it is that you're trying to accomplish and then respond to the moment, right? And so that the reactions that we're having are advancing towards some longer term vision of the strong town that we want to build, rather than just defensive or trying to scramble to figure out what it is know where you're trying to go. And having that longer term vision is so essential to actually successfully pushing advocacy. When are you doing your comprehensive plan? What kind of policies do you want to make sure end up in it? What are you doing with your, oh, you're setting new street requirements. Maybe this is a good time to lower the level of service. And I know I'm getting a little beyond parking requirements here, but it certainly applies in that case too, is finding your moment and taking action in that moment and having a broad enough vision to know what the things are you want to accomplish.
Yes, John, and you're exactly right. And I think it does apply to parking minimums as well. And I love what you're talking about with this no card system. I use the same thing, got from Ryan Holiday, one of my favorite processes to figure things out. And whenever we can kind of zoom out and see the big picture, I imagine it's easier to find the associations. So, you know, if your council is talking about, hey, we need to invest in downtown, we need to have more infill development. If they're not talking about parking minimum requirements, they're not going to be able to achieve those goals. So I love that, John. At first, you were just thinking about parking minimum requirements. But as you started to zoom out and say, hey, this kind of relates to everything else we're talking about. This relates to all of our goals for Sandpoint. That's great.
Well, right. And that's a great, right. Economic development is a great time, which is the conversation that I feel like everyone's bringing up all the time, right? Is exactly that. And so that's a great place to interject the parking minimums requirement. Or if you're in a really conservative town, right, then it's a really great place to talk about, here's a regulation that we can remove that's actually interfering. And why do we need to require people to build parking? They'll build what they need to build. In a place where you're worried about affordability, parking minimums are one of the big drivers up of housing costs. So let's actually do this to actually create a more affordable community. I mean, it is interesting how much many of the biggest problems our communities face in a variety of different ways that actually parking minimums are the cause. And that's why I think this is such an important, thing that people can do, and why we often recommend it as the first thing for communities to do if they want to start building a strong town.
That's right. And John, when you present it like that, as you just did, I mean, it's hard not to get behind it. You know, the affordable housing advocates are down for it, the economic development folk, people in the city who want to increase the tax revenue. So many benefits to at least easing up the minimums a bit.
Yes, I'm convinced.
Perfect. Well, John, this has been an absolute joy. I appreciate you sharing your wisdom and experience with us. If anyone wants to connect with you online, learn more about the work that you're doing, where can people find you?
You know, the best place to find me is on the Strong Town Slack. And I am there. I think I'm just simply John. Is that true? I think so. So please find me, but John Reuter on the Strong Towns Slack. Feel free to send me a direct message or whatever they're called on that format. And I am happy to chat with people and connect with people there and share what I can from what happened in Sandpoint, and if that experience had any help to others. And then I would just encourage, we have so much stuff on the site, a bunch of the articles you and I have referenced during this conversation about parking minimums now because of the big role they play. And so, you know, I may just send you back to those articles because they often have more wisdom than I certainly have and help play out in a variety of different places. And that there are, you know, I think the other thing I'll say is I'm talking about one small town here, but we have content about everywhere from very large cities to very small towns, even smaller than Sandpoint, and are happy to share those experiences of how parking minimums cause problems for towns and how eliminating them helped solve them. So
that's right. And listeners, you can go to strongtowns.org/parking to see a map that we've put together of all the cities and towns across the country that at least, as John mentioned, have made progress towards removing parking minimums. That might just be with starting downtown. That may be a citywide initiative, but some great inspiration as well as you start to gather some grist for the mill before you sit down with a council person. John, thank you. This has been a joy. We'll chat very soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure to get to catch up.
Yes, sir. Thanks, John. We'll chat soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.